Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Nobubele. Are you good?
Good, thanks. And how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I cannot complain. It's a pleasure to have you. I hope winter is okay that side.
Could be better, but we're coping.
You're coping. That's great, man. Great to hear that. Now, we've established last week that it's important for every one of us to actually have a will, regardless of one's net worth, regardless of one's age or health. How exactly do we go about drafting a will? That's what we want to discuss today. So, Nobel, what are some of the key considerations when drafting a will?
I think before we get into it, I'd like to give a disclaimer. So the law is a very interesting thing in that it really varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, so from country to country, right? So I did get a few like follow-up questions last week from some people in the US, and I was like, you know, generally the overall requirements could sometimes overlap, but it's very, very important to check what the laws in your country are. So obviously, I think a lot of the people who will be listening are probably in a South African context, which is what I'm well versed in. So what I'm going to say today is mostly based on South African and UK law, but some things may overlap.
SA and UK.
So, yes, SA and UK. And I think a lot of African countries will have a lot of similarities because of colonization, etc. But I won't go down that route. I think some key considerations before we actually get to the legal requirements for drafting a will. When you've drafted your will, as life goes on, right, it's important that you regularly review your will because your circumstances may change, right? So you need to update your will as your life changes. So it's possible that you made a will before you had children, or you got married, or unfortunately you got divorced. It's important that you update your will so that it reflects your current wishes. So it's hard sometimes to remember to do it at the moment, but if you make it a habit to review your will, let's say every year, then should something have happened in the past year, then it makes sure that you're covered. Another thing that you should consider is when you're
before you go to another thing, but I do apologize for interjecting. I do think that it's very important. I know of a case, just to emphasize on that a certain gentleman who he was divorced and went on with his life and lived a beautiful great life, and I think 3 or 4 years into his lovely marriage, after having been single after his marriage for a couple of years still, he died, never changed his will, and the ex-wife unfortunately was the one to inherit everything. So yeah, I just wanted to share that testimony.
On that note, it's also very important to date your will, right? Because it's possible that you've had multiple wills, and if you don't date them, then it's hard for the court to know which will is valid. And generally, the most recent dated wills done that will be valid. So if your wills are all dated, then it's very easy to establish what were your last wishes. Thanks for that.
Right.
Another thing to consider: we live in a digital age, right? So a lot of us, remember last week I was saying, a lot of us don't think we're worth much, but sometimes we forget that we have a lot of digital assets, right? So a lot of us now have online accounts, whether it's for trading in crypto or investing in funds and stocks, or it's insurance policies. A lot of us have those digital assets. But it's possible that when you're writing your will, in your mind, what comes to mind is, you know, those physical assets. So it's important to address your digital assets when you're drafting your will, and to make sure that you make provisions for the access of those online accounts. So make sure that someone has access to the password so that they can be able to access those digital assets.
Yeah, very important. Now can a person enlist the services of a lawyer but doing a will, or they can just do it themselves?
Yeah, incredible thing about writing a will, you can literally do it yourself. Obviously, the higher your net worth, the more complicated your estate is, the better it is to to get like legal advice. But generally, the actual requirements for your will to be valid are so simple that it's something that you can do it yourself. Maybe that's a good way to segue into what are the actual requirements. So first things first, you have to be 16 years or older, and you must make sure that you're not mentally incapacitated. So what this means is that you should be capable of understanding what a will is and the nature and effect of the will. So are you aware of what you're doing when you're drafting a will? And you must also be aware of the extent of your possessions and what it means to leave stuff to someone, which ties back to what I was saying last week, that it's important to do it as soon as you can, because a lot of us think we'll have time, but it's possible that by the time you think your life is drawing to an end, maybe you're suffering from things like dementia or loss of memory and all of that, and that can leave those who live be who you leave behind with the burden of trying to ward off people who might come and say, oh well, this person had dementia, there's no way they would have left A, B, C, D to this other person. So it's important that you do it whilst you are as young as you can, whilst your mental state is still great, and you can fully appreciate what it is that you're doing. And another thing is that there should never be undue influence, right? So no threats or bullying into, how a person should distribute their assets. But interestingly, the law doesn't preclude you as someone, as a potential beneficiary from saying, look, please leave me this thing in your will. So you can make your case. But ultimately, it is the person who's drafting the will. It's the owner of the assets who must have a final say. And then your will must be in writing, obviously, because there's no other way for us to know, right? So this could be physical or electronic. And ideally, if you're writing it physically, make sure you're the one who's writing it. If you can't write it for whatever reason, maybe you can't type, or for whatever reason you can't write, then you need to make sure that whoever's writing it is not someone who you've nominated as the executor of your estate, or someone who will benefit from the will, or someone who's related to someone who benefit from the will. Because obviously you can see here conflict of interest. It's very easy to then say, how do we know that you're not writing, your own stuff for the benefit of yourself, right? And then make sure you sign it at the end in the physical presence of two or more competent witnesses. Again, those witnesses should not be anyone who stands to benefit from your estate, anyone who's related to someone who will benefit from your estate, or someone who you've nominated as an executor. And then those witnesses also have to, attest and sign the will at the end. So basically saying, look, we were there, this will was signed in front of us, and we signed this will in the presence of the testator as well. So you see, it's very simple, easy things. But again, I do say that the more complex your estate is, the wiser it is to get, it might not necessarily be legal, even financial advisors who may best advise on how to go about distributing your assets.
Now, tell me, Nobel, there's a question that is actually coming through here. Oh goodness, I lost the question now. Let me see. Yeah. Can you cover intellectual property in your will, or would your partners or co-creators have to agree?
That's a very good question that I must admit I'm not entirely sure of. Because what do we mean by covering your intellectual property? I mean, I guess it's yours. It is an asset. It's something that you own, right? So maybe you mean
I suppose to enlist it as
covering.
part is enlist it as part of your estate.
I don't have a solid answer, but I don't see why not, especially if that intellectual property is linked to some form of income that comes with maybe its use, right? So it is an asset. It is yours. So I don't see why a person would be precluded from it. But what I can do is just read about it a bit, and whoever sent the question, that'll be the first thing I'll address next week. But from the top of my head, I don't see why not. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Now, what are the requirements to make it actually valid and enforceable?
So it has to be written. has to be either physical or electronically written. It has to be signed in the presence of, those two witnesses who are competent. So they must also understand what's going on. They must not benefit or be related to someone who will benefit or be nominated as people who are going to administer your estate when you're gone. And those witnesses also have to sign it. I know in some jurisdictions, I think I was doing my research last week and I saw that in the States, there are some cases where your will needs to be notarized. Which is why I was saying at the beginning, it's very important to check the nuances in terms of what exactly is required in my state. But as a bare minimum, make sure that the person has mental capacity, it's written, it's signed in the presence of two or more competent witnesses. And another important thing is to mention, in writing at the top of the will, basically that this is my last will and expression of how I want my assets to be distributed. Because
Distributed.
sometimes if we just find like a document that says I leave this to so and so and so and so, yes, in essence it could be argued that the content makes it clear that it's a will, but the law loves clarity, so it's always best for it to be clear on the will itself that this is actually a will.
Lovely. Thank you so much for that. Now, do speak to us about, the appointment of executors and
Yes,
guardians, etc.
exactly. So I've spoken about executors, and it's important. An executor basically is who is going to make sure that the wishes that you've written down are going to be carried out as you intended, right? So you are thinking of someone you trust, could be a trusted friend or family member or colleague. And ideally, someone who is also technically apt, so maybe a legal advisor as well. And it's advisable that you choose two or more executors in the event that something happens and the one can't be there to administer your estate. It's important that at least you have someone else. So basically, an executor can be anyone, but it's advisable that at least there's someone who's technically apt who can, make sure that the letter of and the law of the will is actually adhered to. Then, in terms of guardianship of minors, I think a lot of people do the good part in making sure that it's clear who they want their assets to go to, how they want them to be distributed amongst their children. But sometimes people, I think especially in the African context, right, where we expect to would see if I die, my sister obviously must take care of my kids, right? But I think it's important that in your will, you nominate a guardian for your minor children. This is also important because in that case, then you know that this person is also going to be responsible for their inheritance until they come of age. When you're choosing a guardian, it's important that this is obviously someone you trust so that the court doesn't have to make the decision in the event of your death. And it should be someone who shares your values and is capable of providing a stable environment for your children. So I mentioned again in the African context that it might seem weird or taboo that you've named your best friend as the guardian of your children when you have siblings. But the law allows you to do that if you want to. And I think it's important that you have a discussion with the person you're naming as the guardian of your children and see if they're mentally, financially, or whatever way in a state where they are willing and able to take care of your children when you're gone. Because the assumption is that obviously my best friend will love my kids as theirs, but loving my kids as theirs and taking them on and raising them is another
It's a
thing.
different story.
So mention the guardian, but have the conversation with the person before so that you're both on board with that.
This issue of guardians sometimes can be tricky, and most cases it does work. I must share a story I heard, I think, early this year, where the lady dies and, of course, leaves everything to the sister. And I suppose this was also, I think, said in word. It was a verbal agreement that, okay, you take care of my kids. And then she took care of the kids, the sister. And a couple of years later, when the kids are now grown, she feels that her sister's house, who is late, who had died some 20 years ago, is now her house, because she has now improved the house, extended the house, etc. And she kicked the children out. Very sad too. It's a sad story I had. I think it was in early January. Cases like that can become very tricky, eh?
Yeah, very, very, very tricky, and I think especially where family is involved, it's sad that sometimes you know your friends actually become possibly better guardians for your children than families, because there's a certain entitlement that family has by virtue of blood, right?
Yeah.
They feel that they're entitled to certain things just because they were born of the same person. But yeah, it's unfortunate that happened, but obviously. In that case, there's a good chance that the sister did not leave the house to that person. So there's obviously a legal challenge there that could have been brought up. But I mean, like, human beings are human beings, and on this side of heaven, you can expect such things to happen. Unfortunately.
Now, talk to me about the risks. I do have a case as well. I think that I came across, but it must be a year or so ago, in terms of the executor who was left to, you know, appointed as the executor of the estate, but now the deceased was in debt, and now they were going after the executor's assets to cover some of the debts. Would an executor be at risk if the deceased is discovered to have been in debt?
Zama, that is actually quite shocking, because I don't see why the law would permit that to happen. Because as an executor, like I'm saying, all I'm here to do as an executor is to make sure that, you know, what's in your will is dealt with the way it should be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Where the executor maybe may have some liability is because, you know, one of the main functions or the main responsibility the executor has is to make sure that, you know, the debts of the deceased are paid off. So maybe in that case, the executor obviously has the power to administer the estate and didn't do things right, didn't pay off creditors when they were executing the estate, and as a result, for whatever reason, then they've gone unpaid. Then maybe in those cases, then there's a case of maybe negligence on the part of the executor for not administering the estate well. So maybe in those cases, again, I don't see it necessarily bringing the debts against the executor, but there might be a charge of negligence in that regard. So yes, there kind of is like a risk as an executor to make sure that you kind of know what you're doing, which is why I advise that as well. As great as it is to have someone you love and trust and your friend do it, have someone who's also technically apt. But in terms of, you know, just creditors just randomly saying, oh, you're the executor, this person owed us this much, their estate doesn't cover it, so now you have to pay us. No, I don't see the law allowing that. If the assets that the person had were not enough to pay for their debts, in some cases their beneficiaries or their dependents might lose out. But only them. I don't see how the law would allow you to go over someone who's just merely exercising an administrative role to pay off the debts of someone who's died.
Yeah, well, but thank you for that. Now, Nobubela, thank you so much, man, for your time. Blessings to you. Always, always a pleasure talking to you. And of course, today was no different. Wishing you a blessed evening.
Thank you so much, Sam. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.